The Haynes Community Garden nets a grant to distribute fresh produce to seniors, and the Outland Music Festival gets underway this week. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. The Haynes Community Garden recently received a grant through the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium to develop ways to supply seniors in the area with fresh vegetables and locally grown food. Sarah Cohn is the volunteer manager for the community garden. She found the grant and decided to apply in May, shortly before the deadline, and found out just a week or so later the garden had received a $5,000 award. It's part of a federal community transformation grant program with the Centers for Disease Control. The program awarded 8 subawards totaling $134,000 to various Southeast community programs. Cohn said in trying to come up with an idea to apply for the grant, she focused on how the garden could somehow serve a segment of the community and settled on the idea that fresh produce could benefit local seniors.
I mean, we have a large senior population here, and a lot of them pioneered here. Some of them are retired here. And so they can look back and remember lifestyles when they were harvesting fish or gardening in their gardens or foraging for wild, plants and berries. And it's just so sad to think that they can't access those foods anymore because they can't kneel down in the garden or, maybe they don't drive and so they can't go up and pick berries or...
Cohn said produce grown in specially designated beds at the garden will be distributed to seniors through various programs such as the Senior Center, Haynes Assisted Living, and Hospice. The money will go toward establishing beds for the produce, developing a good composting system at the garden, and also purchasing a shredder which helps with the composting. Also, Cohn said she's looking for volunteers to help with the program and eliciting participation from the community.
A really important part of this grant was not having it just be one person with a really great idea, but having it be a community effort and having these in-kind donations. And what that means is that there's other people in the community not giving money to you as well, or it can be money, but more specifically donating other items or donating goods or their time.
She's already secured an in-kind donation of a salmon a week from a local fisherman to distribute along with the produce. Cohn said she hopes the program can get up and running once she receives the grant funds this month. She said it's not too late to plant short season crops or second flushes of cool weather plants like kale and other greens. For more information or to volunteer, you can reach Sarah Cohn at 314-0229. Experts pretty much agree with the overall message of a recent warning from the State Department of Health and Social Services. Don't eat personally harvested shellfish ever. The science methods cited by the state, however, have raised the eyebrows of a couple of aquaculture researchers. They say high toxin levels in algae blooms don't necessarily mean poisonous shellfish. KRBD's Lila Keary has more.
Ray Roland, aquaculture specialist for the University of Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program, has studied PSP in shellfish since 1995. He says toxicity of algae in the ocean is variable. The cells can disperse or concentrate depending on the current.
Cells and cell appearances and cell numbers gives you an indication of there could be a problem, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there is. The only confirmational testing that will actually tell you you have a problem is testing for the toxin in the shellfish.
Roland says the state did not test shellfish for toxins and relied on algae testing alone to issue a recent warning. He says algae testing is useful, but only to identify areas where shellfish testing might be warranted. He has other concerns about reports he heard based on the state's announcement, such as where to find safe shellfish.
Well, one of the statements in it that said that the only place to get shellfish or safe shellfish is from the grocery store. Well, our oyster farmers don't sell just in grocery stores.
Roland says shellfish farmers in Alaska sell in many places, and their product is tested. Despite questioning the state's methods, Roland says its conclusions and warnings are correct.
The general statement by part of everyone that's engaged in this PSP debate is that you don't eat untested shellfish, period. If people need to be warned. I mean, this is a bad time of year. to be out there harvesting shellfish.
He says that a beach with safe shellfish one day can have toxic shellfish the next, because the next high tide might carry an algae bloom. He says there's no way to know whether shellfish is toxic without testing, and there are no tests available for personally harvested shellfish. Gary Freitag, a professor and marine advisory agent for the Ketchikan area with UA Fairbanks, questions some assertions that PSP levels are higher than normal or the result of climate change. He says there's no historical information to compare with data from the last few years. Freitag says the state's warning could be misconstrued, leading people to believe that unusually high levels now means it will be safe to harvest shellfish at another time of the year. He says people should eat only commercially harvested shellfish, no matter the month or the weather. Freitag says the state's warning also might lead some people to stop eating shellfish completely or extend the concern to all seafood. He says that last year, after a similar warning from the state, some people decided to stop eating salmon, which can't contain the toxin that leads to paralytic shellfish poisoning.
But it doesn't matter, because when people hear the ocean's toxic with high levels, they immediately assume that everything's vulnerable, and that's the danger. I mean, we're hurting our fisheries and things like that by making statements that are real inflammatory, that there's high levels out there.
Eric Wyatt is an oyster farmer, operating since 2004 on the outside of Prince of Wales Island near Marble Island. He says commercial shellfish farmers and harvesters deal with the specter and the reality of PSP on a daily basis. Wyatt says there are stringent regulations and tests they must follow to make sure their product is safe. Wyatt says his location is good, so his oysters rarely show any detectable traces of PSP. He says the state's research of algae blooms is a new method of studying the issue, and he's worked with researchers. But he also questions how the data was released.
Even though there's more information is being gathered about harmful algal blooms, we still don't know the direct correlation to how that makes our shellfish not edible or edible.
The state warning stresses that commercial shellfish is considered safe. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Blue smoke goes drifting by into the deep blue sky. My memories of home will never die.
That's the band Pacific Curls. And if you're going to the Atlin Arts and Music Festival this weekend, that's one of the 15 bands you'll hear during the three-day event. But the festival is more than just music, as producer Kim Wicknicki explains.
There's a lot going on in addition to the music, and some people have described it as a great big hug. That's what the festival feels like. There's just a lot of spirit and community in this festival, and I think it's because it's multidisciplinary and family-friendly. There's just a really nice vibe to it.
The festival includes a slate of visual artists offering workshops in a range of mediums, from felting to pottery, painting, basketry, and fiber arts. There are also music, storytelling, and children's workshops. Wicknicki said the festival will also host independent film screenings, including the best of the 2012 Dawson City International Short Film Fest and Smoke and Fish, a documentary based in Haines, among others. Wicknicki emphasized the big difference between the Atlin Festival and other music festivals is not only the variety of activities, but the family-friendly atmosphere. Kids of all ages are welcome, and there are several youth activities throughout the event.
Our festival is really family-friendly, number one. So kids 12 and under are free, and we have lots of events and programming dedicated to them. They have their own little area where they can go and play with adult supervision, and lots of there's clowns and there's storytellers specifically for them, and artworks like craft workshops, and then art workshops for youth. And so that's one part, is the family friendliness.
As for the music, there will be three stages going throughout the day, and an evening stage will host headliners. One of those includes David Grisham's folk jazz trio, which includes guitarist Jim Hurst and Jim Kerwin on bass.
Slick talking, wig wearing businessman. He sits across the desk with a pen in his hand. He sits, "Sign here, boy. I promise you fortune and fame."
Other headliners include multi-instrumentalist David Lindley, Swedish-born artist Sarah McDougall, and a French-Acadian band from Nova Scotia, Gary Como and the Voodoo All-Stars. Senegalese musician Elage Douf will bring an African flair to the festival, and artists like Whitehorse's Annie Lou will bring classic bluegrass and acoustic music to the stage. The festival begins Friday and runs through Sunday in Atlin. Camping is available at the festival grounds or at nearby campgrounds. Online ticket purchases are only available through Wednesday evening. After that, if not sold out, tickets will be available at the gates. For more information and a complete festival schedule, visit atlinfestival.ca. And as we sign off, here's another Atlin headliner, Declan O'Donovan. Send us the song and you wonder, when you've lost all hope, you don't know what to do. I won't begin or crying or thinking about you. This is Margaret Friednauer. Thanks for listening to your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support. And you can always visit our news section online at khns.org.